The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast was made possible by Squarespace, the all-in-one website maker with Cover Pages, a new feature that expresses your ideas with a bold single-page website. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian's daily-ish roundup of film news and reviews. I'm Henry Barnes and it's Thursday, 5th of November. Joining me in the arena today are Catherine Short.
Oh, hello.
And Benjamin Lee.
Hello.
News! You may have noticed that there's a James Bond film called Spectre out at the moment, or at least Sony are praying you are. The company have reportedly spent more than $100 million on marketing their $250 million film. They need, according to analysts, $650 million to break even because its backers are splitting revenue with distributors. Catherine, whatever you think of the film itself, these are kind of astonishing numbers, aren't they?
Astonishing, yes.
Astonishing numbers. Astonishing. It kind of makes the time when we thought that Titanic's budget of $200 million was big seem rather silly and quaint, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know, Henry. I mean, Titanic still looks quite dear, doesn't it? I'm surprised that Spectre cost that much. But then I'm surprised that the marketing was that little, because it feels like I've seen more marketing money spent than money on the film, if you know
what
I mean.
Been everywhere, buses. Yes.
Oh, buses.
Tubes. Anywhere else, Ben?
Mugs.
Trams.
Mugs, trams, the street. I don't really see why they'd need to spend that much money on marketing, because there's so much pre-awareness for it anyway, and there's such a big PR campaign that I don't understand why they've had to splash up against the wall so much. But and also, like Catherine saying, the budget, I mean, there were some nice locations. There wasn't that much action in it, though. So, and they smashed a few cars up, but I don't know how it would have cost as much as a sort of sci-fi
movie.
Yeah,
we could have done it for less than that, couldn't we?
We could do the next one.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it is a self-fulfilling thing, that a big film has to look like a big film from the shoot to the marketing to the...
You got these films, I mean, there's that Iranian film, isn't there, that's sort of the most expensive Iranian film I'd ever made. Is that right? It's $40 million and it's the biopic of the Prophet Muhammad. Not sure if it's Iranian. But anyway, and that apparently you really see, like with really expensive Bollywood films that are also about $40 million, you really, really see the money on screen, because part of the point of them is absolutely that this is the most expensive film ever made in this country. Come and look at all this money. And so, it's, I mean, I'd be quite interested to see one of those, in fact, to sort of see how you can obviously spend money.
Because you're not recreating any new lands in Spectre. They're not making, like, it's not like a fantasy or sci-fi film. I'm just not sure how they would have justified that much spend, though.
But. Yeah, and then other than the opening scene, it's not like there's thousands of extras involved in it either.
I mean, with those extras, you know, because you think about insurance and the kind of bill you're looking at for that. But then with all those extras, you wouldn't need insurance for them, would you? Or would you? Depends how real that helicopter going about was.
Ben, Variety is saying that only 90 films have made that benchmark of $650 million. Do you think Spectre can do it?
It will do, but I mean, because they're already suggesting this week that the US opening isn't going to be as big as Skyfall, because the reviews in the US have actually been weaker, not only just for Skyfall, but compared to the reviews over here for Spectre. So I think it might struggle to reach the Spectre mark. I think Spectre's the 13th biggest film in history. I think it made
Skyfall.
Yeah. It made $1.1 billion, and I think Spectre will pass $650 million, but I'm not sure if it'll pass $1 billion. So it means it'll make like a nice profit, but nothing huge compared to what they spent on that, I guess.
And you can read more about Spectre on theguardian.com/film. Mockingjay Part 2, the final part of the Hunger Games saga, let's call it a saga, screened for critics last night. Ben, tickets were limited, but you and I murdered several people to get our hands on one. Was it worth the slaughter?
It was, yeah. I feel no guilt for it at all. Just about worth more than the people we had to kill for Mockingjay Part 1. Which was rather boring, and I think the decision to kind of split them into the final chapter into two parts has kind of affected the last one too. It's better than Mockingjay Part 1. You actually get something happening in the film, which is nice, but the pace is all over the place. It kind of goes slow at some points and fast at other points, because you're splitting a very thin-ish book into two films, so people kind of talk a bit slower.
Awful lot of running down corridors as well. Long scenes of running down corridors.
Yeah, and it's expanding a relatively simple plot into. I mean, 4.5 hours ultimately is the running time of two Mockingjay films. There are some good things about it. The action's great. Jennifer Lawrence is still really great, and it's incredibly depressing, which is really interesting for a film of this scale, for a 12A film based based on a young adult novel and aimed at kids, essentially. It's really bleak and really dark.
Mm. There's frightening as well, right?
Yeah, there's a sewer sequence, which is very frightening and it's kind of scarier than anything I've seen in a horror film for a while.
What's frightening about the sewer sequence?
They're in this sewer, yeah?
Yeah.
And there are these mutts, they call them, and they're sort of these creepy sort of zombies.
Glorified zombies with big teeth.
But they look, I mean, they're really convincing and scary, and they kill a few people, and yeah, it's really intense. I think a lot of parents are going to be dealing with some scared kids this
It's
weekend.
Pushing the limit of the 12A certificate.
Yeah, but I mean, I still think that ultimately the kind of the greedy decision to split it up has kind of ruined the saga for me.
Yeah. Catherine, you're above the fray and you didn't come to the Hunger Games with us, but you did see The Bridge of Spies, which we were tipping as an Oscar favourite, having not seen a second of it the other day. Were we right?
I think so. I think that's partly because it's a weak year, but also partly because it's a really good film. I mean, it's very like Lincoln in that you've got this very star vehicle, sympathetic lead performance. Tom Hanks plays this lawyer, Jim Donovan, who represents a guy played by Mark Rylance who's accused of being a Soviet spy and then arranges a spy swap in East Berlin with him and a pilot who's been shot down. And it's really good. It's like Lincoln in that it's really, really gripping, even though it's basically just men talking to each other. But it's this strange thing. You've got this sort of real central lionized performance from Hanks, like you did have from Day-Lewis. And it's the same sort of dynamic with the wife. You know, you really admire this guy and you love that he's so tired for all his good work and he's got such morals. And then you've got Mark Rylance, who does a very sort of Mark Rylance supporting turn in, you know, so much to say, it's very good and it's very sort of understated. And yet also you can't keep your eyes off him when he's on screen. He's one of those actors that really, really draws you in. And they handle that with Hanks very well. But none of the other people you recognise, there's Alan Alda's in it briefly, but most of the other people, like in Lincoln, are just character actors that you just never see before. Well, Jesse Plemons is in a bit. I'm undermining my argument quite a lot here. But
Amy Ryan, right?
Oh, yeah. But you don't, you know, she's like, she's got extraordinary bust in it. It's
really
extraordinary, yeah.
Oscars.
But yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, it's like a proper old fashioned movie. They've overdone the lighting a bit. So it's got that thing of, you remember in Lincoln, you had quite a lot of sort of very bright light from outside streaming in through windows. Mm. The whole film's like that. It's very kind of, it's slightly blinding. But I thought it was great. Really enjoyed it.
And you can check out Peter Bradshaw's review of The Bridge of Spies on the Guardian Film site. And that's it for today. A reminder that our mothership, The Guardian Film Show, launches this afternoon. Plus, guys, we have an exclusive clip from The Lady in the Van.
Ooh.
Could you bless us with a little bit of...
Lady in the Van.
That's lovely. Follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Cheers for listening. And may this pod be forever in your favour.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.